From KQED Public Radio, this is the Capital Notes podcast for Friday, April 23rd. I'm John Myers from KQED. Anthony York, the editor of Capital Weekly, blog king of the Los Angeles Times.
Blog king.
Is here, as always.
Not always.
I know.
Not always.
Anthony still has a grudge from last week where Steve Poizner was the podcast guest.
Although I hope the two of you had fun.
And then he replied in kind by knocking me off the Capital Weekly top 100 list. So
payback is a witch, as they say.
Yes, indeed.
Is that what they say?
I don't know. Why don't you ask Lana that?
No.
Tell everyone that we have a guest today.
Yes, our guest podcaster, my lovely daughter, Lana. Say hello, Lana.
This is Take Your Daughter to Work Day.
And Wait, Earth Day.
What do you want, peoples?
Ah, see?
There you go.
See?
Chip off the old block.
She's
huh?
keeping you honest, huh?
Yes.
Lana,
yes.
Who do you think's going to win the race for governor? She's pondering. She's thinking. Da.
Microphone.
Ah.
The microphone. Yeah.
Oh, well. Get back to us by the end. We'll figure it out.
We're reporters. We're not predictors.
Nah, well, some of you are predictors. You were quite the predictor last time we talked. Okay.
That was years ago.
It was years ago. So let's talk about what's happened. Not everything has happened since we left, but I figured we could talk. We'll probably talk a little bit about this week's going-ons here at the Capitol and the California Democratic Party convention, which wrapped up last weekend in Los Angeles.
I can vouch for you. Saw you there.
Yeah, I was there.
Yeah.
I was there for Saturday.
Me too. Just for Saturday.
Yeah. Saturday night, and then left on Sunday. But conventions are a grind. I don't find them as fun as I used to find them as a younger reporter.
Less married man.
Yes. Guy who used to have some sleep on his own. Well, let's just start with today. Let's start with today, the day we're recording this, Thursday. Abel Maldonado gets through the California Assembly after that weird limbo land of the last time his vote came up. Confirmed by the Assembly, moves on to the Senate. We're hearing Monday.
Right.
That we'll get a vote there. And 54 votes.
Was it 54? I left. Yeah. It was 52.
Yeah, 54 was the last number I got. 54 votes. He gets a 2/3 vote in the lower house.
Ah, sweet irony.
In his quest to be lieutenant governor. What changed between then and now?
The calendar.
It's all the calendar.
The main issue is now, today was the magic day, or Thursday, April 22nd was the magic day, after which the governor has the ability, if and when Senator Maldonado's seat becomes vacant in the Senate, the governor can consolidate the runoff election to fill that seat with the November general election. That's important because a general election has a much higher turnout than a standalone special election, and Democrats believe a higher turnout will give them a better chance to win that seat. So it's all about politics and about Democrats having a better chance of picking up that Senate seat in the fall. You got that.
See, this is what life at home is like when you have kids.
Yeah.
I know it well, too.
Yes.
We'll get to you in a moment.
You haven't got to the mouthy phase yet. They're still goo goo gaga cute at your house.
Yes. We'll get to you. Don't worry. Your segment's coming up. So, so obviously the calendar is big, and you've been talking about that for a long time, the fact that, you know, that there is a political
And does anybody listen?
Here.
No.
Somebody listens. No, somebody okay. listens to us. But, you know, also in this, too, there's a whole lot of other things going on. I mean, first of all, you know, we haven't dealt with all the budget issues, so that's going to present a problem if Maldonado is confirmed by the Senate, which I think most people believe the Senate.
They did it once. They could do it again.
Yeah, they'll do it again.
Yeah.
You know, so you've got budget votes coming up. There's also been chatter. Chuck DeVore, a Republican from Orange County, brought it up on the floor of the Assembly today. It's out there, so I'm saying DeVore said it. I'm not saying that there's any way to prove it. But on the same day of the vote, the Citizens Compensation Commission meets in Burbank to talk about legislative salaries. Maldonado was a big proponent of lowering those salaries earlier. And there was some talk that, you know, these are people appointed by the governor, that perhaps there had been some request from the legislature's perspective, if they gave Maldonado the job, that maybe the governor's appointees wouldn't cut their pay again. No one has said that's a quid pro quo that's happening. Governor's office says that's not the case. But DeVore brought it up on the floor as another thing that people are angry. Republicans are angry. They don't want him to have the job. Diehard Republicans don't want him. Diehard Democrats didn't want him.
Wait a minute. I mean, most Republicans voted. Chuck DeVore was the only Republican to vote against his confirmation.
Sorry, diehard Republicans outside of the building. Let me rephrase.
The ones who are more conservative than the members of the assembly. I mean,
Who would those be? Yeah, so who knows? But anyway, Maldonado, that saga finally seems to be
desagifying.
Ending.
Yes.
Ending at long, long last.
Mercifully.
Which means we just move on to all the other things that have been going on. So let's talk about the election and the convention from Los Angeles.
Okay.
So you have a new poll out, Mr. Capital Weekly. Tell us about the poll.
A new poll conducted by Republican pollster Adam Probolsky and Democratic pollster Ben Tulchin. Wow, say that one 10 times fast. Our poll shows a 28-point lead for Meg Whitman over Steve Poizner and a double-digit lead for Tom Campbell over both Carly Fiorina and Chuck DeVore.
That's a big change in the Senate poll.
Yeah, it is a change in the Senate poll. I think one of the reasons we may have gotten a different result from others, keep in mind in the Senate race, we were in the field before these paid media campaigns began. We saw this week some new ads in the U.S. Senate race. But what we do have, which the other public polls didn't have, the PPIC and field, is we have the ballot designations. Carly Fiorina on the ballot has decided to call herself a business executive, which, given this climate and this environment, I think there is a sort of an anti-Wall Street, anti-CEO sentiment. There's some thought that might be affecting her standing in the polls. Similarly, Chuck DeVore in other polls has just been called an assemblyman. His official ballot title will be assemblyman/military reservist. Again, talking among Republican voters, when you have Tom Campbell, economist, Carly Fiorina, business executive, and Chuck DeVore, military reservist, the ballot designation might be helping DeVore and hurting Fiorina. That's some of the speculation about why our results were a little bit different.
So on the governor's race, your poll data matches up somewhat with internal polling we've been hearing about, and even the Whitman campaign trying to get out in front of this story early this week by saying their own internal polling showed that Whitman's lead was smaller than it had been before, though still sizable and big. No one is saying this race has become a dead even race.
It's still a 28-point lead. And remember, ballots go out in about 3 weeks now. I mean, Republican, an estimated 70% of the votes cast in this election will be votes by mail. And those ballots get mailed in less than 3 weeks. Now, what we found was that a lot of the movement and the tightening in the race was not necessarily Poizner going up. He went up a few points in our poll, but Whitman has come down quite a bit when compared with the numbers from the recent public polls. Our poll, unlike the other two surveys, started monitoring response after Poizner's commercials hit the air. And so it's not going to be a 50-point race. The question for Poizner is whether there's time to close the gap and whether, if he's succeeding in softening the support for Whitman over the next couple of weeks, the critical thing to watch will be whether some of those Republicans move off of Whitman into the Poizner camp, whether they go back to Whitman.
Well, and as has been pointed out to me, and you referred to absentee voting, I mean, what's really key in a Republican primary is when you make that case, because Republicans do vote by mail pretty substantially, which means that Poizner's clock is ticking a lot louder than it would be ticking if he was really just waiting for June 8th.
Right. And this is some of the complicating factors in running modern day campaigns, right? You can't just wait till the last 2 weeks anymore because people are voting for the last month. And so you need the last 6 weeks. And so the way that absentee voting usually works is that there's a surge of voting right at the beginning, right? A month out when the ballots are initially mailed. And then in contested races, people tend to hold on to their ballots and make their decisions in the last 2 weeks. So it's almost like you need a push for the people who decide 4 weeks out, and then another push for the people who are making up their minds in the last 2 weeks. That's an unintended consequence of the mail-in voting, is that it becomes more expensive for campaigns to get their message out and to try to close the deal with voters.
Whitman and Poizner will be squaring off in their final debate.
Are you going to that?
I am going to that. Yeah. I was going to plug that. Their final debate on May 2nd. So more than a week out now, Sunday, May 2nd, at 5 o'clock in the afternoon, statewide television on Comcast, Time Warner, somebody, the Cal Channel.
They moved it to prime time, huh?
And public radio, and KQED and other stations around the state. And yes, I have been asked to be the moderator of that debate, and I thank you. Thanks for that applause.
Keep it civil, will you, Myers?
I will try to do a better job with that than I have done in these podcasts.
Thank you.
So that should be interesting, but that'll be their final debate, and we'll see what happens. This is a panel of reporters. I get to ask one question, and then the five reporters on the panel take it from there. And
who else is on the panel with you?
Let's see. Who's else on? I'm not on the panel.
You're the moderator.
I'm the moderator.
Right.
I only get one question. I think the five reporters are Carla Marinucci from the San Francisco Chronicle, Josh Richman from the Oakland Tribune, Santiago Lucero from Univision, Michael Blood from the Associated Press, and Jack Chang from the Sacramento Bee.
Yeah, nice. So, you got them all.
We'll see how it goes. But it could have been even more fun because it could have been a three-person debate, which is what Jerry Brown wants, a debate between himself and Meg Whitman and Steve Poizner. And that was kind of the crux of his entire message, I think, and the campaign will probably call me and tell me I'm wrong with that, but that was the crux of what his news strategy was at the state Democratic Party convention, to challenge the other two to a debate.
Right.
I mean, and it worked for a day. It definitely dominated the news cycle out of Saturday of the convention, with the Whitman campaign kind of doing a bit of a back on their heels, we're open to the idea, then 90 minutes later, we're not open to it at all. He has to debate his own primary challengers.
That's a key 90 minutes there.
Key 90 minutes. It's almost like the missing minutes from
the Watergate tapes.
The Watergate tapes, yes. Rosemary Woods, please. Yes. But we're way past our time here.
Yes.
What do you make of the convention and Brown's stuff?
Well, look. I mean, debate challenges are usually not the. That's usually not something you see from front runners. It usually you see reporters who are or reporters. Excuse me. Wow, candidates who are trailing badly in the polls. Like we see Peter Sherman, right, the Democrat who's running for governor against Brown.
One of them. There are actually seven Democrats on the ballot and eight Republicans on the ballot.
Right. Yeah. But we see candidates who tend to be trailing in the polls, challenging their competitors to debates. In Brown's case, I think it's a little bit different. I think because it fits into a larger strategy that we're beginning to see now from the Brown campaign, he's trying to make the case that Whitman and to some degree Poizner are kind of empty suit millionaires or billionaires who are simply trying to manipulate voters through paid advertising and canned messaging and not discussing the issues of the campaign. So in as much as it's part of a larger campaign strategy and part of a larger narrative about Whitman and Poizner, I think it makes some sense.
Well, especially Whitman, because, I mean, actually, you know, the three-way debate would have to be good for Poizner as well. It would have to be a good thing for Poizner in the sense that, I mean, it puts Poizner on that stage. It kind of elevates him to a certain sense. It legitimizes his campaign, given how far he's been behind. And hey, if Poizner beats up on Whitman, it all the better for Jerry Brown, if in fact Whitman is the winner. I mean, on June 8th in the primary.
Yeah, and it's also a way for Jerry Brown to try to get into the story in April, which, you know, his story doesn't really begin until June. So, it was a nice try, but I don't think it's going
to
happen.
Yeah, and I have to point out that if the debate offer had not been there in the weekend convention, then there would have been an awful lot more questions and stories written about the things that the Brown campaign doesn't like, which are questions about whether or not the candidate has enough specifics in the race so far, and also a little bit of the Jerry Brown style, which is a bit of a stream of consciousness kind of conversation. They're not speeches. They're not really statements in that way.
It is interesting, and I think this was, you know, I found it, I went down to the convention just to see Brown in action and see what, and, you know, wrote about it a little bit for the LA Times blog at latimes.com/California politics. You know, he likes to think out loud, and he's sort of a stream of consciousness thinker, but it is interesting. Look, coming out of the mouth of a 35-year-old candidate for governor, it feels one way. Coming out of the mouth of a 72-year-old candidate for governor, kind of feels a little different, you know? I mean, the...
Go ahead, say it. In other words,
well, right.
it opens him up to questions about...
About his age.
His age and the way he processes what he would be able to do.
Right, and I think it's only a matter of time before we see this critique come from the Whitman or the Poisoner. I think Poisoner's probably focused on Whitman at this point, but I think that that the Whitman people eventually... This critique will be, whether it comes from a candidate or a surrogate on the Republican side, we're going to see the age question factor into this debate before November.
There was also a lot of, you know, the whole thing about specifics. Did he offer enough specifics? He took great issue with a question I asked him in the press conference about.
He did take you to task.
The lack of specifics, yes.
What did he call? He said... I'm
a citizen of the Republic.
Right.
Because what happened was, for those of you who let me fill in.
I did blog on this, too.
Yeah, what the filling in the blanks were is that what a lot of Brown was talking about in his address to the convention and then afterwards were things like, were federal issues, were things that the federal regulators need to do better about Wall Street, the feds could do better with job creation, et cetera, et cetera. And I said, silly me. With all due respect, those are federal issues. And he said, well, I'm a citizen of the Republic, and the governor of California has influence.
And he's running for president, right? Isn't
that? That was last time.
And next time.
Yeah, always, and always. So that was a little – he wasn't too thrilled about it. But without that whole debate strategy and that whole debate challenge, I think there would have been more stories through the weekend about – specifics. Were there enough specifics? And you're starting to bleed that through again this week. Again, where are the specifics?
Right.
You know. Yes, he wants to create jobs. When he talks about the California Conservation Corps,
which is kind of
the only specific he had in the speech, it seemed like at a certain point, is that enough for a state that's bleeding? You know,
the same core
a
that
few million jobs.
The same core that Governor Schwarzenegger had proposed eliminating.
There's that.
Yeah, and I do think that these sort of meta stories about Brown are coming too, right? I mean, in the media world that we all live in, you know, it's only a matter of time before we in the media, those of us, those four of us that are left, are get a little restless and start asking. Like, we already saw a column from George Skelton in the LA Times over the weekend, and I do think that. Look, candidates don't like to talk specifics. That's not what candidates do. They like to speak in platitudes, and so it's going to be our job to try to pin all these guys down and gals down and try to get them to tell us what their real detailed plans are for the state.
And just one more thing on the debate. It's been pointed out to me, which is a good point, that while Brown said it would be unprecedented for candidates of different parties to debate— It's been pointed out to me it actually did happen before.
The recall?
Well, not just the recall, but 1998.
In 98,
yeah, which was good because I tend to forget things at this point in my life. Right. But yeah, 1998, where you had Gray Davis, Jane Harman, Al Checky, and Dan Lundgren all on a stage together.
And where are they now?
And where are they now? Well, we know
two
where
of them are in Congress.
We know where a few of them are.
Two of them are in Congress.
Yes, but it would be fascinating. It would be fascinating to watch them all go. And there's a Rasmussen poll out this week. 71% of the people who answered said they'd love that three-person debate. So,
yep,
but it won't happen.
No,
it won't happen. There's absolutely no. That's actually one of the bets that got made at the convention. Carla Marinucci, I'll out her here from the Chronicle, said she. She bet me a dinner at Chez Panisse, the very shishi restaurant in Berkeley.
At the cafe or at the restaurant?
Well, then she modified it to the cafe since the restaurant cost more. But she said she'd bet dinner that there would be no three-way debate. So,
and you took her up on it?
Yeah. So Meg, I didn't take it. I think it was a one-way bet. In other words, I don't have to pay off, do I? Did I accept that bet?
I don't know, Carla.
Carla, don't call me.
You guys will see each other at the debate, though.
I'll see her next Sunday. We'll have that discussion.
Yeah.
So I guess that's... pretty much the big news of the week.
Wow.
That's it.
Boring week.
Nah, you know. Polls, debates, lieutenant governor votes, et cetera, et cetera. Yeah. And I'm sure we'll have more to talk about the Maldonado thing next week because he's got to go to the Senate. Then we got to talk about the budget.
Yeah.
And you and I have been watching the tax revenues. They don't look very good.
Nope.
Let's actually say that for a moment.
You've been monitoring these day to day.
It'll be very interesting to see. We're supposed to hit $10 billion for the month of April alone in tax revenues. And as if we sit here on Thursday, we're not even halfway to that number by what they have taken in so far. And we're sitting here with you know, just a few days left in the month.
And we've passed the big, you know, April 15th window where all the money was supposed to pour in. This was supposed to be the week where the money poured in.
And so we were about a couple of billion bucks ahead before April. But if we're much more than that behind by the end of April— you know, that's only going to make the fight that much worse when we get the revised budget and have the fun summer that we have in front of us.
We'll just have to take it out of the kids' travel budget this summer.
That's out of your travel budget, Lana. And that was
there,
a growl.
There's another angry taxpayer.
That was a growl from Anthony's daughter, Lana. And with that, Anthony, that's Anthony York.
Say goodbye, Lana.
I do not want to say goodbye.
Then, until next week. And that's our final podcast of the Take Your Daughters to Work era.
Goodbye.
I'm John Myers from KQED. We'll see you next time.
Goodbye.